Introducing Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclico's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclico Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB, AMYZF, and Frankfurt 2AM. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Ted Dixon, CEO and co-founder of InkResearch.ca, Canada's first online financial news and research service, providing insider news and knowledge to investors. His website, CanadianInsider.com, home of the Canadian Insider Club. You can find him on Twitter at InkResearch. Welcome back to the show, Ted.
Jim, it's great to be back, and thanks for everyone tuning in today.
Ted, do you think there are still supply-side opportunities even as a recession supposedly is looming over us?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we put out our top 40 report this week called the Supply-Side Opportunity, just reinforcing our theme here that the Canadian market has a lot of companies, particularly in the resource area, that are well positioned to help deal with all these sort of bottleneck problems that have emerged since COVID, but also the geopolitical realignment that's taking place in the world right now, where you hear about the United States wanting to be less dependent on China, and that's a very real development that's going to play out over the next decade. So that opportunity is there, and you know, we're going to have though these short-term headwinds, and right now the market is all worried again about a recession, and this has got the bond bulls all excited, and so we've seen yields come down, and commodities have taken a bit of hit here on Thursday on the 17th of November, and you know, we'll have to see how that plays out. I mean, we're looking at the Atlanta Fed has a 4.2% projection for the U.S. Growth rate Q4. That doesn't sound like a recession to me, but, you know, markets are forward-looking. Yeah, maybe there'll be a slowdown in 2023. We'll just have to tough that out on the commodity side. If there is, the more medium term, you know, I'm not talking about 20, 30 years. I'm talking about the realities of what the U.S. has charted in terms of its industrial policy path, is that they are redesigning their supply chains. Canada can be a part of it. Now, look, Jim, we've had, I can't tell you, I've had months and months of gloom and doom that I've heard on Twitter, financial podcasts about the U.S. housing market. It's all collapsing. It's going to take the U.S. economy down with it, blah, blah, blah. I mean, I've heard this over and over again for months. Okay, we know that housing has taken a hit with higher rates and higher mortgage rates. You know, when they hit about 7%, there's, you know, of course, it's going to have an impact. But, you know, so far in the last month, Canadian forest product stocks are rallying in our top 40. We have two of them in our top 40 list, and you know, they've been rallying over the past month, and you know, they're actually doing okay on a year-over-year basis. So, you know, I think either you get, you know, depending on, everyone has their own timelines, risk tolerances, and so everyone has to make their own assessment in terms of how they're going to position their own you know, investment strategy. But generally speaking, yeah, you know, we're in a period of high volatility. There's war going on. You know, you got geopolitical conflict. You got the Fed who is kind of, you know, feeling its way in the dark about how high to raise interest rates. There's going to be lots of uncertainty. So playing the short-term stuff, playing the three-month stuff, you know, it's really hard to do. But on a more, you know, on a more focused, medium-term basis, we really like the supply side story, and Canada's well-positioned, you know, on the resource side, both in the underloved mining area, underloved or hated forestry products area, and oil and gas, which has got a lot of attention over the past 18 months, and now, you know, we're seeing crude kind of getting bounced around on recession fears, but, you know, it's had a nice run, the oil and gas group, so there is a pullback. Is it really that big of a surprise? Not to us, and I think not to, you know, most of your listeners who, you know, been around the market for a while. So, you know, it's going through its consolidation. Where, you know, we're really interested is when is the mining space going to take off? And, you know, today we've got some recession fears, copper's taking a hit. But we'll see. You know, the whole narrative could change in a few weeks. So we'll just have to watch. And you know, but look, again, we're looking more over the next couple of years, and no one knows when the turn is going to be. No one knows when copper could break out, silver could break out, all these, you know, industrial oriented base metals could break out. You know, you just have to be positioned if you believe in that story. If you don't believe in that story, well, then, you know, you'll have to, you know, look for something else, probably. You know, we're just not on that page. But look, hey, there are plenty of bearish analysts out there who have ideas on where to hide if you think, you know, the global economy is going into a perma state of collapse. There's lots of people out there who have ideas on that, but we're not one of them.
What's happening with forestry?
Well, I think you just had, in terms of, you know, what we would see is that there's just been so much gloom and priced in that people have got caught up on the demand side of the story. Yes, obviously housing demand is going to take a hit in the United States with higher rates, but what about the supply side? You know, in Canada, you know, we don't have the same forestry inventory, that we did even, you know, two decades ago, right? But we had, you know, with British Columbia, with the pine beetle infestation. And, you know, so it's, you know, it's a different ball game. And, you know, we also would love, you know, it's not just housing. I mean, there's also an industrial side of the equation, and you know the industrial side is still ticking along, and you know how it's not a 100% housing, you know, isn't the driver of forest product demand. It's a big part of it, but it's not the only part of it.
What's happening with your insider sentiment? Are they hot on natural resources?
Oh, it's still looking pretty good. I mean, you know, Our energy indicator is below 100%, so there's slightly more stocks with selling than buying, but that's not a surprise given the massive rally in the group. You know, I think, you know, what we're seeing on the oil and gas side, we are seeing some selective profit taking. The relatively easy money has been made for those who were willing to put all the gloom and doom aside from 2 years ago. That, you know, that was a nice ride up. And, you know, as soon as Joe Biden got elected, it kind of baked the rally into the cake because he basically, you know, on day one said, well, we're going to restrict oil and gas supply in the United States. So that, you know, that there, talk about supply right there. You cut the supply. What does it do to the price? Up and up. So that was a good, run. But now, you know, now we're heading into some profit taking, which, you know, I think you have to watch, and we're watching these stocks in our morning reports, and I hope to be focusing on one in the next few days where we have seen some insider selling in a Canadian producer that has focused heavily on the condensate area, and you know it does wonder, you know, it does get us to think, well, maybe it's going to be a while before we see the breakouts on the energy side. But, you know, the overall medium-term picture looks good. And so then, again, everyone has to look at their individual situation. Some Canadian oil and gas companies pay nice dividends. Others just focus on buybacks. Others have a mix. So everyone has their own needs there. But I think that's an important consideration if we are heading into this sort of, you know, consolidation or waiting period for the next potential leg up. You know, some Canadian oil and gas stocks will pay you a nice dividend to wait for that. Others are catering more to the hedge fund community and are focusing on buybacks. So, you know, I think, that it really becomes a stock-picking, individual choice situation right now in the oil and gas area. Mining is another story. Look, insiders are spring-loaded and ready for a rally. The question is, when does it break out? You know, if it does, there's no guarantee, you know, just because, you know, we've got, well over 100 stocks in the mining area. Oh, sorry. We have more stocks in the mining area with key insider buying than selling. So, you know, that is an upbeat signal. They've been waiting patiently for a breakout. It hasn't happened yet. Insiders tend to be, you know, longer term focused. And, you know, we would be leaning towards their signals that we are going to get that breakout, but we just haven't had it yet. So, and with all this chatter about, recession, then it's going to slow things down. But look, our basic materials indicator, I'm just looking at it right now, it is over 400%, right? So that includes, and we're seeing buying across the mining and basic material sectors. You know, it's not just gold stocks. We're seeing lithium. We're seeing specialty materials. It's widespread. So they're betting that, you know, look, you know, maybe we have some headwinds, but you just have to be patient, work through it, and eventually these commodities are going to be needed by the Western democracies if they hope to decouple from China and if they want to rebuild their economy. I mean, it's as simple as that. And if you're skeptical of that story, and if you're skeptical that the economy is going to be strong enough as we work through 2023 to rebuild their supply chains, if you're skeptical of that, then you should be skeptical of the commodity story. We're skeptical. What we're skeptical of is why it's taking so long. And, you know, I think it's more anchored in, the investing community's, love affair with technology, government bonds, 60-40 portfolio. Basically what worked last decade is there's a lot of professional money managers who can't mentally let go of that. What earned them a lot of money a decade ago, and having to get their heads around the resource area, they just don't want to go there because it's really hard, you know. So that's why a lot of your guests and the people you bring on House Street can be so helpful, you know, giving people some direction in terms of what's happening in the space. And you know, a lot of these institutional managers are going to have to retool and spend a little bit more time focusing on what makes a good mining project as opposed to what makes a good software project. I mean, it's time to refocus some attention into the real economy space.
We'll have more with Ted Dixon right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Ted Dixon. Ted, I think you just said something really important. The real economy, the FTX collapse, millions of people won't get their money back. It's disappeared into cyberspace somewhere, somehow. The bankruptcy people say there were no financial records of who had what. It sounds like it might have been a Ponzi scheme. We're not saying it was, but that's the speculation, because new investors were paid with money that old investors had put into it. So you're talking about real things. That mine will be a mine until you take everything out of it. Real projects dealing in real product. And even if the housing market goes down, the house will still be there, maybe not worth as much, but there's still some value to it. So talking about ignoring value, the Canadian cabinet, federal cabinet, has rejected the expansion of an iron mine in Nunavut. It would have doubled its production. Don't we need more projects like that, not fewer, or confining the ones that are there to their current status?
Well, Jim, you covered a lot of ground there, speaking of real economy. I just say on the FTX thing, I don't think the money disappeared into cyberspace. I think we can see where some of the money went. And, last time I checked, Sam Bankman-Fried was the second biggest donor to the Democratic Party after George Soros. So, no, I don't think it all disappeared into cyberspace. It just, it was very, very selective, as I guess where it ended up. But in any event, the bigger question, I think, for Canadian investors is what you hit on here in terms of how are we going to capitalize on rebuilding these supply chains. And Jim, you pointed to this mine, this iron mine in the Northwest Territories, and I'm not familiar with that story, but it does not surprise me. And we just had a false statement from the government, and they talked a very good game about, oh, we have to get more projects. We have to get more projects, investing in major projects. Look, I'm just gonna quote this right from the document. Canada's abundance of natural resources has contributed to our economic growth for generations, ensuring that the resource and other major projects from clean energy to critical metals and beyond can continue to be developed responsibly with meaningful indigenous participation is essential to Canada's long-term prosperity. Okay. Then they go on to say, what is the magic formula to that the federal government sees as ensuring that long-term prosperity? Well, you cannot make this up. They are providing $1.28 billion over 6 years to basically increase the size of the bureaucracy. I mean, basically it says over 6 years, this is with a million remaining and authorizing per year, ongoing to the Impact Assessment Agency of Canada, the Canadian Energy Regulator, the Canadian Nuclear Safety Commission, and 10 other federal departments. Jim, since when has increasing the bureaucracy ever accelerated the development of anything except delays, red tape, and more problems? Like, I'm sorry, but look, if they were saying they were spending $1.3 billion on hiring more doctors and building more hospitals, I might buy that. But spending $1.3 billion on government bureaucracy? Are you kidding me? No, there's only one way that we as a country are going to get this stuff going, and that is to have benchmarks and deliverables saying we are going to spend $1.2 billion in order to ensure that no project, is left on the hook for the regulatory process for 2 years. Whatever is reasonable, like that, and if a project meets the requirements that if they're not given the approvals, that there will be penalties for the government, or something, right? That is measurable. That says, oh yes, now we can see that there will be some certainty with these projects. Instead, what do we have? Since I'm sorry, if there are any government partisans listening to this, I'm just going to state a fact that since the Trudeau government's been elected, there has been no LNG export terminals commissioned. Yes, there's one or two being built, but this is the problem. They keep getting built and keep getting delayed. Meanwhile, one of the poorest countries on earth, Mozambique, has exported its first LNG to Europe. And this export terminal, has been built by a very poor country. It's been a few years in the making, but they did it. And we just think how much, how many LNG project, if the Trudeau government had really set it focused on this from day one, you know, we could be bringing in lots of revenue to help deal with the crisis we have in healthcare in this country. We have an emergency room crisis in Ontario. We have a cancer waiting crisis in British Columbia. Well, where do these people who want to stick, leave it in the ground, where are we going to get all the money for this? Because the same lobby groups, right, that demand that the Trudeau government not approve anything, basically, they're the same groups that say, oh, yeah, but you should invest instead in renewable energy. That all costs money, okay? And where's it going to come from, right? We never hear that side of the equation, right? And so I think it's finally going to – I think Canadians are starting, I hope, to see how far behind we have become due to our own inertia here. And the other thing I would say, though, it's easy to blame the Trudeau government. But, you know, they're just – I don't say just, but you know, basically they're making a political calculation that this is kind of what Canadians want, that they don't, we don't really want these projects. I mean, that's their calculus. I disagree with them, right? I don't think that's right, but that's just my opinion. Maybe they are right. Like, but until Canadians start saying, no, this is, we need to do this because these are our resources in the ground. There's no sense leaving them there when Mozambique and Saudi Arabia and Russia are taking their resources out of the ground and making money off of it. There doesn't make any sense for us, you know, who are, you know, honest actors in the grand scheme of things. We're trying our best to do, you know, what we can to reduce our emissions. Yes, I know there's a problem with some very large energy projects in one province, but, you know, that can be dealt with. Right? I mean, the emissions from the oil sands can be, and they are, and there is a strategy to deal with them. But let's not throw every single large scale energy project, infrastructure project under the bus because, you know, we're too timid to get our act together and say, no, no, this has to be done. And, you know, so if we think we have the luxury of just kind of wandering around here in the regulatory wilderness and we're going to spend another $1 billion on red tape? I mean, come on. I mean, this, like, this is just, it's very discouraging. But look, you know, let's hope that some of this works. Let's hope we see before the next election, commissioning of an LNG export facility, right? Like, I really hope that happens. And there is one. You know, LNG Canada is well on its way, but, you know, it's not done yet. And let's hope it does get done. But, you know, there's the whole East Coast LNG fiasco where we could have been by now well underway to supplying our allies in Eastern Europe with LNG. But no, we've let Mozambique beat us to it. That's just the reality. Canada, are you happy with that? Like, it makes me kind of embarrassed, to be quite frank.
Should they make an effort, because Quebec doesn't want pipelines, so should we be pushing a natural gas pipeline to Churchill and export LNG there?
Well, look, I think there's a lot of potential solutions. I'm not that familiar with any commercial. I'm not familiar with the Churchill option, and I just think it's incumbent on a federal government to bring the country together, get these projects going, and do what it takes to get them going. I mean, we're in a war footing, for heaven's sakes, right? We're supporting the Ukraine, which is fighting Russia. This is a war, right? War requires action, not excuses, and, you know, and not grand visions of what things could be. War requires action now. And again, you know, there's this complacency in North America. Well, it doesn't really affect us. We'll do what we can. And, well, you know, but look, we need to get our dental care, you know. And how will Canadians feel if this war drags on with the Ukraine and you know, it eventually kind of spills over into NATO, and even in sort of a quiet way, or no, it was a quiet, but sort of, you know, step by step. And one day we wake up and Russia's in the Arctic. Right, and claiming some of our islands. are we, like, we're just not psychologically ready for that as a country. But we can't even get LNG built on the east coast of Canada, okay? How are we going to respond to a real threat? And then the mainstream media will be all in a flap about how we're unprepared we are. Well, no kidding, right? So, in any event, I'm not very hopeful about our strategy right now, based off of the false statement. But you know, I would love it for the government, Christina Freeland, to prove me wrong and to get things moving. That would be great. But you know, I'll believe it when I see it. Let's hope for a shakeup in the attitude of government regulators in Canada. But I'm not very hopeful on that. You know, and unfortunately, sometimes it takes a crisis to get things going. But come on, Canada, do we really have to wait for Russia to be in the Arctic for us to realize that we're vulnerable here? Can we not get things moving? Can we not please get our act together? Like that's just my hope for my kids. Again, it's why do we want to leave our resources in the ground when all these other actors all around us are saying, well, thank you very much, Canada. We'll take your market share from you and you can go and debate, your internal environmental, regulatory, social ESG scores. And, meanwhile, you know, we're losing out. So it's,
Well, so far, Canada's solution is six icebreakers that have a machine gun each. I'm sure the Russians are scared.
And, of course, warfare has moved so far beyond that. I mean, you didn't need an icebreaker. Whoever did those explosions for the Nord Stream pipeline underwater, it wasn't done with an icebreaker. Like, it is such a complicated world now, but if we cannot even get an LNG facility built on the east coast of Canada, are we really equipped for it, Jim? I think Canadians should ask that question, right? Like, so now the good news is, I mean, that's the growth side. I mean, we do have the conventional oil and gas mining industries that are top notch because of the people who are involved in those industries, because of the expertise, because that they've made the investments through thick and thin. And I've been critical of the Trudeau government. I will say though that they have resisted the hysterical arguments for a windfall tax on the resource industries. That would be a very bad signal, and they've resisted that. So I applaud them for that. It must have been very difficult for them to resist that, because I know there are forces in the Liberal Party, and they're, of course, their coalition partner has called for it, their alliance. It's not a coalition. I know it's not a coalition government. It's an alliance, the political alliance with the NDP. They've called for a windfall, a profits tax. You know, that is such a bad idea in terms of the future and encouraging investment, and I'm glad the government has avoided that. So I don't want to be like 100%, like, so I'm sounding negative. I am negative about our ability to get big projects off the ground and our ability to boost productivity. But, you know, we are doing some things right. Thank goodness our constitution gave resources management to the provinces. So those that have wanted to develop them, you know, have been able to do so. So, you know, so British Columbia and Alberta and Saskatchewan and Manitoba, you know, they're moving forward with their fossil fuel development. And some provinces have said, one large province has said, no, well, that's fine. And instead, they're doing mining. Okay, that's fine. You know, but it's up to the federal government to bring everybody together with a national strategy, especially when there's an existential threat to our sovereignty with a bad actor on the world stage, to get our act together, you know. And so this is it's discouraging on that front, but it's encouraging that we do have companies that are working and doing what they can And on the grand scheme of things, you know, they're well positioned. Look, we've got the U.S. government. A story came out that the U.S. government is, under the Inflation Reduction Act, is looking at making investments in Canadian mining. Well, that's a testament to the strength of our mining industry. And it also shows that the U.S. government has its strategy together, that we know what it is. When I read the what was coming out of the Inflation Reduction Act, I knew pretty quickly where the U.S. government was going with this. I still don't have a real idea of where the Canadian government is going with its infrastructure, mining, critical metal strategy. I know they're consulting, they've allocated money, but and they're making some supports here and there, but I don't have the sense of what the overall strategy is. So, but you know, that being said, let's not get too down on terms of the public policy shortcomings. We have very strong junior, senior producers in this country that are offering Canadian and global investors a chance to participate in this global realignment of supply chains. Look, you want to look at a great example of what I believe is a well-managed company, and it's a large company, so I don't mind saying it here. I don't hold this stock. I'm not recommending it. But it's in an industry that's been really, really kind of shunned again by the mainstream investment crowd, and it's steelmaking. And, you know, there's a large Canadian steelmaker that just increased its dividend. It just announced a special dividend, all while admitting that, yes, demand is taking a hit in the short term, but they're in it for the long haul, and they will be there as steelmaking supply chains get realigned. And this has been in process now for a few years on the steel side. The steel industry it's been a public policy decision by the Americans to basically decouple from China. Canada kind of got dragged kicking and, I don't want to kind of say kicking and screaming, but we had to make a choice. The Trudeau government had to make a choice. And it's a tough choice, you know, in terms of how imports from China fit in all this, and that's not an easy choice to make because there are competing economic interests in that choice. It's not just a government's ideology. There's real push and pulls in the economy on whether, you know, how much we should be decoupling from China. But that's the reality, is that the Americans want to decouple from China as much as possible, it seems, and Canada's kind of aligning with that, right? And the steelmaker is poised to potentially benefit from that, right? Now, but, you know, when you have recession fears, when you have like a pullback after a massive stimulus, yeah, demand is going to fall from the peak. But, you know, where's it going to go over the next 5 years? And they seem quite, well positioned to benefit from the ongoing economic needs of North America in terms of steel, okay? So, look, there's plenty of companies out there in the Canadian market that are well-positioned for this changing world. Yes, there's uncertainty right now about the economic outlook, but the geopolitical outlook and the medium-term outlook, I think, is pretty much baked in the cake, and Canadian companies are well positioned for that. So let's concentrate on the next 5 years. Let's not get too caught up in the next 4 to 6 months, and let's hope that Ottawa really, really gets its act together on the big project front and the regulatory front. That would really help Canadian prosperity. Canadian per capita incomes would get a shot in the arm, I'd expect. You know, yes, our GDP is growing, but, you know, without immigration, one has to ask, how would we be doing? And I would suggest it's not very good, well, not very well. Immigration has been helping to boost the economy, but immigration alone is no silver bullet. We need to start really juicing the incomes of the average Canadian, the per capita income. You don't do that by bogging the economy down in red tape, and that's exactly what's been happening, and that's what exactly has to change.
Ted, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Jim, thanks for having me back.
My guest has been Ted Dixon, CEO and co-founder of InkResearch.ca, Canada's first online financial news and research service. You can find him online at CanadianInsider.com. If you have any questions for Ted or any of our other guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on Twitter at HowStreet. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com Radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.